Blog Talk Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والعصر، إن الإنسان لفي خسر، إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر.
Assalamu alaikum. Hello, my name is Nisa, and today we have our co-host Amina, and you'll be listening to the Muslim Sisters. Today we will be discussing mental health and the stigma behind seeking professional help. Today we're going to have a guest, Dr. T.K. Harris. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Dr. T.K. Harris, just in case you haven't heard about him. Dr. T.K. Harris is a doctor who specializes in mental health and Islam. He trained and qualified in Oxford about 25 years ago and worked as a heart surgeon, where he became fascinated as to how stress and bad news cause heart attacks. He realized there was no difference between the mind and any other part of the body, and he turned to neuroscience in 2001. He has been a friend of Musi Mink for many years, and this connection led him to start writing books on how to be happy and content in everything. His work is found in print on Amazon, and he has many videos on YouTube. His mission is to help every Muslim to have a strong and happy life. And I just wanted to give a little recap from last week, and we discussed how COVID affected your life. I pray that COVID people positively, not the disease itself, but being home and being able to worship Allah more, being able to go to Hajj, because I found that in the beginning, especially when I wasn't working as much from home, I had more time to go to sleep earlier and get up earlier and be able to pray to Hajj before Fajr. So, inshallah, we're able to get closer to Allah while you're home. And I pray that those who have passed away is granted Jannah. So for those, and Allah forgive them for this, and I mean, inshallah. Amina, if you're there, my co-host. There. I'm not sure if she's able to connect or not. Okay, Hasana. I just wanted to read a little bit from Dr. T.K. Harris' book, just to give you an idea of some of the things that he speaks about and some of the things that I loved when I was reading it. So the book is called Instant Insight, The Muslim Mind Guide for Success and Contentment in Testing Times. So in the book, he states, peace is found in accepting what Allah has given us. Look around you. Most people are basically doing the best they can in difficult circumstances, which is what we're in today. You may find parts of yourself difficult to accept. Accept that too. This book will help you embrace yourself more fully, which is very useful if you wish to find long-term contentment. Accept ourselves because we are living evidence that Allah has made us the way He wished to. This is therefore a truthful place to start from. You need to accept yourself as an inherently good and worthy person, just as you are. No need to prove it or justify anyone. You are worthy just as you live and breathe. Look past you and get to. Believe truly that you are and always will be a worthy person, valuable with all your faults and strengths, just as they are. Alhamdulillah, that's so beautiful. So we're going to talk about some other things that he mentions in the book, but we're going to have him come on now, and I'll try to touch on some of the things that he says in the book. and he'll be able to explain it a little bit more in detail. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. C.K. Harris.
Wa alaikum salam. Good evening.
How are you? I'm so happy you could join us today.
I'm really glad to join you. Thank you for inviting me. It's nice to talk to our American cousins.
Yes, alhamdulillah. Where are you calling from?
At the moment, I'm in London, but I'm moving around a little bit. But I've just a short sojourn here in London, going back up to Oxford and catching up with some colleagues over there. And then it's more talks and squeezing in some writing, and hopefully, inshallah, well, it's a busy time because I've got a book which is kind of coming out soon, and I'm also trying to finalize an app, which is an interesting journey. So, inshallah, look forward to launching those things in the next few weeks, inshallah, too.
Okay, okay. And I know you have another book. I didn't get the other book, but I have Instant Insights. What's the name of your other book?
Yeah, the second book after Instant Insight was called Instant Actions, and that was, or is, a sort of like if you think of Instant Insights as the theory, then Instant Actions is the practice. So it takes common problems. In fact, let me just try and get hold of my old copy that's in my briefcase here, and it takes everyday issues as chapters, and it's got like something like 40 different chapters, and each issue is given a sort of description and an explanation, and then you've got a couple of exercises at the end to sort of get around it. And I hope they're just kind of really ordinary things that we all experience in day-to-day life. So one chapter, for example, is called, you know, when we lose sight of our purpose, or adjusting to sudden changes in life, or struggle with procrastination, issues with loved ones. So it's that kind of stuff, really. There is another book that's come out since then, which is a bit more focused on managing anxiety. But all of the stuff is hopefully, inshallah, just sort of trying to be useful to, you know, people like us, ordinary Muslims. You don't need to be an expert to understand that everyone has a hard time. And how can we, I guess, not only get through the hard times, but actually find positive ways to really enjoy life? Because that's, inshallah, you know, that's what we all deserve, or at least what we deserve to look for.
Why do you think it's absolutely hard for us to be content? Because you mentioned in your book about contentment. Why do you think it's so hard for us to find contentment?
Well, I think it's interesting. I'm minded to think of something which is, I think, fairly central to the sort of American philosophy of things. And I believe it says something like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. And I've always sort of chuckled when I saw that. And I think most people in psychology, psychiatry will chuckle. The pursuit of happiness strikes me as the pursuit of perfection. It's just endless chasing, and I'm not so sure it's. I'm sure it's well intended, but what it implies is that you'll never find it. And certainly, happiness itself is a troublesome concept, because being purely happy, I believe, is quite vulnerable. It's just a state of elation. And I suppose if you are going to be generously minded, you'd think happiness was closer actually to a sort of long-term sense of being at ease, adjusted to the life that you have and bringing the best of yourself to whatever you face.
Mm-hmm.
It seems far more sustainable and wise, and in keeping with what the realities of the world are and what we're told by Allah. You know, this is your life. I haven't promised you a bed of roses, but neither have I promised you endless suffering. You have to find your contentment, and in so doing, so you will find me. And I truly believe that good mental health is about making the most of where you are and being able to adjust to it in a way that you can be content regardless of whether you're a millionaire or some guy on the street. And everything in between.
That's very important.
Absolutely.
Okay. You also mentioned self-acceptance. That's hard for some. What do you recommend for accepting yourself?
Self-acceptance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I frequently get asked this. You know, what do you mean, Doc? How can I accept myself? There's so many parts of myself that I hate, or so many regrets I have, and how can I just accept those? And there's a fairly straightforward clarification which will help people to get past this. And I sometimes use a metaphor to accept it, to explain it. Acceptance does not mean agreement. So when someone says accept what you have, so supposing you struggle with, I don't know, whatever, you know, a guy or a woman might struggle. Let's pick something arbitrary, the color of your hair. I don't like the color of my hair, right? And supposing we live in a world where there's no such thing as hair dye, right? So somebody is saying, you know, I'm going to be unhappy now because I don't like the color of my hair, and I cannot accept myself because this is the way I am. I would say, well, actually, you can accept the reality. This is the color of my hair. I don't have to agree with it. I might not like it, but I have to admit it's mine. And when I admit it's mine, that ends up being a very powerful thing because I have brought something out in from the cold. So if I don't like X, Y, and Z about me, it doesn't mean that I reject that they're part of me. They're part of me. And if I accept those things that are part of me, I can finally start having a conversation with them. I can begin to make peace with them. And in so doing, I understand where my, you know, resentment came from, or find a way to sort of move past that constant unnecessary battle that I have with things that about me that I am not perfectly happy with. And it also makes me more in tune with the reality of what Allah has said. Allah has given you X, Y, and Z. And whatever you think of those things, you will surely agree that there's other people who would value what you hate about yourself, and vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So
right.
Be aware that you are who you are, and the things that you don't like about you are, you don't necessarily have to reject them. Just accept that they're there. You know, just as much as I look at my garden and I look at a lot of weeds, pointless for me to say, oh, well, there's no weeds there. I have to accept that they're there, you know. It makes it easier for me to deal with them. I suppose what this leads on to, I guess, is the idea of self-worth. And that's, I think, underneath self-acceptance. And that is an even more noble, I guess, an even more independent concept. Because regardless of whether you accept yourself or not, and regardless of whether you think you are a worthy person or not, you are. Allah has stated as much. He loves you extremely. He has not made you as a coincidence. You don't exist as some sort of side effect, as some sort of accident in the universe. You exist because you have an individual purpose, and you are of immense value to Allah. You don't have to do a single thing to prove that. And anything you've done, good or bad, in the past makes no difference whatsoever to the fact that regardless of everything else, you are of high worth. So you might not think it, but it's a bit like if the very sun itself thought, well, I'm not very hot. It doesn't matter what the sun thinks, whether it's hot anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So you're valuable anyway. The quicker you come to terms with that and accept that, then you can move forward to start really doing things that sort of embrace your better sides. And it might be a bit of a mental leap, but I think it's easier if I sort of put it like that. If I say to you, well, I don't really, it doesn't matter. You know, Allah doesn't care, or He does care that you don't value yourself, but He values you anyway. You might as well take your cue from Him.
Right. All true. Okay. So you also mentioned, let me just go to it. You mentioned about unwanted feelings. So you say here, even your unwanted feelings are your responsibility to deal with. If you cannot manage them. It is your responsibility to learn how. How do we learn from our or manage our unwanted feelings?
Right. Good question. And I suppose that makes something that we all fundamentally struggle with. Well, first of all, I'd say we will have these unwanted feelings and unwanted impulses for as long as we live. And it's referred to in the technical terms in psychology. You know, everybody's got impulses and desires and things that right till their dying breath. And Allah describes this as a constant, if you like, a jihad, a battle. And scholars call it the jihad al-nafs, the battle of the nafs. Now, if I was to explain a little bit what this means, the nafs is, if you like, in Western psychology, the broad equivalent is the ego or the desires and the emotions that we have. And they're not bad and they're not good. They're just there. In fact, they can be very good for us if we listen to them at some times. You know, when you get that feeling that something's not right, but it's you can't pinpoint it, or if you get a sense of danger, that is coming from your nafs. It's that ability to sort of get a sense of what's going on without needing facts or figures to prove it. On the other hand, it can go wrong, because you might judge someone badly simply because of the way they look or some impression they made without intending to, and that's when your nafs is misleading you. So your battle, if you like, is to try and work out when it's helping you and when it isn't, and also when it gets carried away, because if it's one thing that the nafs does, it gets carried away with feelings and desires. You see you're trying to not eat bad foods and you see a beautiful cake and you get this strong urge to eat the cake, for example, right? And how do you get round it? It's unwanted, but it is yours. So work out what it is you can do to A, accept that it is yours, because when you accept it, a bit like I said earlier, weirdly enough, when you accept it as yours, you start to, it automatically starts to diminish. It automatically starts to reduce. If I identify a feeling coming towards me, I describe a method, I think, in Insights as well as Instant Actions. I use the acronym RIADH, R-I-A-D-H. And the first step of managing an unwanted feeling is R for recognize. Recognize it. Ah, I feel temptation. I feel angst. The moment you name it, it's a bit like the devil. Once you point him out, he gets all shy. And he kind of starts saying, hey, come on, I'm your friend here. I want to make you feel good. Well, you say, yeah, okay. Why is that feeling there? Oh, perhaps it's there for a good reason. Yes, the nafs is there. It's interested in trying to make us nourished. And it's always panicking that we're going to starve. So whenever it sees something nice, it's going to make us feel hungry. So don't punish it. But then understand where it comes from and then use the other parts of yourself. Use your intellect. Use your judgment to go, actually, I acknowledge I'm tempted, but on this occasion, probably wiser not to. And in those few magical steps, along with doing a couple of extra things like taking some slow, deep breaths, being thankful to Allah, taking stock of the other things around you, you can and you will learn to get round these little, what do I call them, hurdles in life. And you'll just find it easier and easier to navigate around these very common everyday issues. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
A lot of sense. Okay. All right. So this next one is also hard, some of us. You mentioned... what someone else did right or wrong is not yours to change. They are part of the world that you can't take responsibility for. The only thing you can take responsibility for is what you do. So why is it so hard for some people to let go of control? To me, it's about control.
Yeah.
Control what you do.
To control what other people are doing or to influence them. Well, again, I can draw this down to a natural sort of inclination that the nafs had. If there's one thing the nafs does, it tries to protect you instinctively. And in order to protect you, you know, Allah tells us the nafs, we have that in common with all other living sentient things. So where they have instincts to, you know, find their own kind, we have instincts to find our own kind. Where they have instincts to be suspicious of something different, we have the same. Where they have instincts to try to control their environment, we do. And but we're set apart in that we have the instinct, but we also have a fantastic ability to actually then control our environment, or to communicate in more sophisticated ways, in subtle ways, or in blatant ways, such as violence or whatever, to try and control the actions of other people around us. And I guess controlling someone else is, at its root, it is a desire for some kind of security. You know, if I was to think of a baby and how it controls its mother, well, what it does, it cries. You know, if the mother's walking away, the baby will cry. And the baby is sort of saying, well, I'm not quite happy with what you're doing there. I want you to come back to me. And why would the baby do that? Well, it comes from possibly a good place. In fact, you know, Allah has given babies the ability to cry because it wants the mother to return to the baby, because that's what, you know, a mother should do. And I'm sure every mother will sometimes be asking Allah, well, could you possibly make him cry a bit less? But we all get the sort of the benevolence behind the feeling. But as we grow up, I think we struggle to let go of the idea that ultimately people are better if they're left to make their own good decisions about the world. And we sometimes can't come to terms with the fact that people have their own ideas of what they want to do, which may be just as valid as ours. We assume sometimes that we are doing something to control them. Usually people who are very controlling justify it by saying, well, I know what's better for both of us. That's something like that. And that's sort of at the root of it. They have this assumption of needing to, if you like, take care of, but they can't distinguish between taking care of and actually smothering somebody. So that's one of the sort of roots of control. And it's a difficult thing to let go of, but we must, because if we do not let go of the wish to control someone else, we are taking away something that Allah has given to them and us. He has given us fundamentally free will. So if He gave you or someone else free will, who the hell are you to come and take that from someone else? You're crossing a big line there. But, you know, we are human beings. We're faulty. And as much as I sit here saying, you know, it's bad to do that, I'm sure there have been moments where I've tried to control someone else in a way, then maybe afterwards I thought, man, I got a bit out of hand. You know, we've all done it.
Okay. My next question, what makes a worthy investment? How do we get here?
A worthy investment? Could you be more specific? You mean in yourself? Or
yes, you say, let me see. Okay, just like a good company, you must consider what it takes to make you a worthy investment. You talk about think of yourself in the same way your mind is like a company whose product is your decisions and your behaviors.
Yes. Are you new
to yourself?
Yes. Well, I think this talks a little bit to the necessity that Islam places on developing the self. As Muslims, we are given what we're given, but we'll be given something in addition to just existing, in addition to just sort of, you know, pursuing whatever our intellectual or other desires are. We're given a free will, and we're given instructions. And there's instructions which are here. This is what I would like you to do. These are the do's and don'ts. And I would like you to become, and one of the things that Allah says many, many times is, I want you to become of those who reflect. And I would like you to move your character towards these values here. I've given you examples. Here's the prophets. I've given you stories about the prophets. I've given you instructions in the Quran. And these are the sort of characteristics which I hope that you can demonstrate as a human being, because those are the ones which I believe would stand you in good stead, and therefore as a result they please me. So you don't just exist with a passive sort of interest in life. You take on specific tasks. Now, some of those are necessary tasks. So when Allah says pray, you pray. And Allah says, you know, give zakat, you give zakat. So those are necessary tasks. But within those tasks and beyond those tasks, there's a whole load of other things which require or invite you to become, more invested with this kind of general goodness that one might find in many other philosophies, you know, whether you talk about stoicism or inherent natural tendencies or wishes to be good people, which even an atheist, for example, might say. You know, you might say, I don't need God to tell me that it's good to be nice. But yes, but hold on. And I would say, well, why don't you just go back to the manufacturer? Why are you making up your own rules, right? But anyway, I would say those things count as investments. So just as much as your brain or your mind is a factory, would you like, and if your product is decisions, well, wouldn't you like to have, if you like, a quality control department which looks at your decisions and says, was that a good one? Was that a bad one? Should we put this out on the shelf, or should we say, nah, we don't, you know, that's the way you treat it. And so what does it take? So if you say, well, this decision is, this little habit, I'm not so sure about this, it's not working out for me. So you can go back to the factory floor and say, well, okay, what is it that led me to make this decision? And that's the way you invest in yourself. You say, I'm reflecting and I'm sort of putting time into understanding how I produce my product, if you like, my decisions. And I'm trying to work out ways if I can just chip away at those things that aren't quite where I want them to be. And as a result, I hope I'll have a happy company with good products.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So you also mentioned about being self-aware. Let me see if I can find that. The process of self-aware, it helps you to trust in yourself, make better decisions, which are your better quality products, and accept what life brings. Then by trusting in Allah, you will do your best, whatever comes your way. So even though we believe that, you know, we put our wholehearted into Allah, it's so hard sometimes to have that self-awareness. How do we maintain that?
Well, there's daily, there's good reason why I believe there are daily practices which we're invited to do and sometimes mandated to do by Allah. So modern psychological practices invite you to do things like mindfulness and reflection and journaling and what have you. And Islam is not averse to those. And I suppose there's some sort of modernist Islamic texts, and even my writings, I say, you know, it's good to make a journal and what have you. So doing daily things that take stock of who you are in your fullness and accepting all of it. That's the key. When you observe yourself, I mean, you can do this. I mean, I've come around to doing it in Salah, because Salah is that time when you have just that it's like, I see it as a sort of mental spa break. And I see our religion as being one which offers you 5 times a day international spa breaks in a Barbados of your own. And that's really what it is, because you just get to disappear. You're told, you know, this religion is telling you, you got to take these amazing spa breaks 5 times a day. Otherwise, you're in trouble. Now, if any religion did that, you'd be like, well, this sounds like a good deal. But that's really what it's meant to be. It is not meant to be a dreary duty where you're thinking, oh, right, I'm going to do my salah. Actually, if we think about how the Prophet did it, what you're doing in salah is you are undressing everything about you. And you're saying, here I am again, God. And these are some words which you told me are helpful to me. So I'll read from this surah and I'll learn from this surah. And then when I'm putting my head on the ground to you, you've told me that when I put my head on the ground, that's when I can tell you anything. And I'm going to tell you stuff, God. I'm going to tell you I had a hard day and I didn't quite know how this thing worked out. But I also had a good day when this guy said this to me. What does it all mean, God? You know, sorry, I don't have anywhere else to take this. And you're the one who told me to come and tell you. So here I am. Okay. And he's there. He's loving it because that's what he's called you for. And when you do that, it sounds, I don't want to sort of make it sound too, what's the word, psychobabbly or sort of airy-fairy. This is real. I'm a doctor trained in Oxford. I don't just say things because there's no evidence. When people do this and we stick their brains in head scanners, the very act of going over your day and putting it into words, if you do that for 30 days, having never done it before, your brain will be a lot more efficient and your anxiety levels will diminish and even your blood pressure will drop.
Mm-hmm.
Tangible physical evidence that this stuff works. And we have been told to do it for nigh on 1,500 years now. I suppose what we've collectively sometimes failed to do is that we get taught, if you're born into Islam, you get taught how to praise Allah. But that all happens when you're a kid. And perhaps understandably, you're not actually told about the beautiful meditational sort of ethereal stuff of Salah. And if you look at Salah properly and reflection properly, I'm more minded to think of, you know, when you see beautiful images of or Japanese monks sitting in some beautiful garden meditating, and that's the kind of scene as a Western ideal of someone at peace. Really, that should be a person praying Salah, because that's what it is.
Right.
Someone who's at extreme peace, who's talking to God, who's happy to confess, who's accepting what he's gone on. When you do that, I guarantee you this, because I am not trying to convince you, the evidence is there. Peace of mind returns, self-awareness increases. And I'm talking self-awareness. Let me clarify here. Self-awareness is very different from self-consciousness. Mm-hmm. Self-consciousness is when you're always aware of the things you're doing wrong and you're insecure. You know, I'm very self-conscious in public, or I'm very self-conscious of the fact that, that's different. Self-awareness is a broad acceptance of all your good and not so good qualities and just saying, oh, there they are. Here we go. This is who I am. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. On with the show. That's what it's like.
Mm. you kind of answered my other two questions in this one question, in this one answer you just gave. So I won't ask questions, but I do see that we have someone, I think, that has something to say or a question, a caller. Hasana, do we have a caller? Let me just. Do you mind, Doctor?
No, so please carry on.
Okay. Hello, this is the Muslim sister. Assalamu alaikum. Please state your name. Where are you calling from?
Wa alaikum salam. Cecilia from Virginia.
How are you? Do you have a question for Dr. TK Harris?
I do have a question. How can I or anyone for that matter prevent yourself from feeling anxiety to the point where you have a panic attack in response to someone else's actions? Per se, with me, immediate family, they seem to be the one when if they do certain actions, can often cause me to have great anxiety, and I often, you know, you make salah and ask for peace so that you won't respond in that way. How do you control your response?
Wa alaikum salam, sister. Thank you for your question, and may Allah grant you relief and peace. May my answer be of use, even if it's in some small way. So, first of all, I'd like to, if I may, just I guess, ask a small bit of clarifications, the kind of things that people do. You don't have to be too specific, but are they things that would alarm anyone else, or are they just sort of normal things that particularly scare you?
Yeah, they would alarm other people as well if they are Muslim.
Oh, I see.
If they have the same belief.
So you mean
it would be shirk, things that could possibly lead you into Jahannam.
Okay, so they're doing things which might be acceptable in a secular society, but which cross sort of moral lines as far as Islam is concerned. Is that
yes.
what you're getting at?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're not crimes or stuff, but they're sort of
no.
They sort of make you feel uncomfortable. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, that's a good question, which actually has, in some ways, quite straightforward answers, which, oddly enough, I'm struggling to sort of, when I have so many answers, sometimes I've got to work out which one of those I got to give you first, because I've got several
okay.
answers for it, all of which kind of makes sense. So, okay, let's try to retrace our steps from this interview. Actually, the first thing is your question was interesting in itself, which was, how can I prevent myself from reacting when other people do something? Right, that's what you've sort of said. And
yes.
Well, there is an implication within those within that question that actually some of the answer lies within, why would you need to do any of that? So if, for example, so I understand what you're saying is, when you see someone doing something, you don't necessarily have any control over it, but
right.
you can't help but feel a bit panicked by it, right?
Right.
So
yes.
there must be a question underneath that, which is, I talk about in my book, I talk about the truths of life, which are, if you like, guiding principles for your akhlaq that makes your life a little bit easier to live. And one of those lists of truths of life is that you can't control what other people do, and bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people, and so on. And so having that, for example, would be a good defense. So when you have this truth of life and you really believe it, you hold it to your heart, you go, well, they're doing something, they will be judged. Allah knows full well, if you're seeing it, Allah is seeing it. He's seen it and he's predicted. He's seen that he's designed the t-shirt. He knows what's going on. He knows full well what's going to happen with that person, wrong or right. He's put you in that position when you're going to see it. And he's sort of asking you, you know, what are you going to do with this? And you're not to take this as some sort of opportunity or a punishment or sort of some sort of test in the bad way, but you're sort of saying, okay, well, how do I cope with the fact that other people do things that I'm not happy with? Well, I got to accept the fact that I can't control what other people do, and more to the point, why would you need to prevent yourself from reacting? Partly, one of the issues is with panic attacks and anxiety in particular, is it's the fear of the attack itself. If you were to just let the thing happen, what's the worst that could possibly happen? All it does is you feel a bit rubbish for a second or a minute or 10 minutes, and then it's gone. All that ever happened. It never killed anyone. It's not a heart attack. So if you accept that, then it's a bit like the guy saying, actually, I'm really miffed that, you know, the question you're asking me is like some farmer coming to me saying, look, I hate it that every time there's a rainstorm that comes, my field gets drained. I have to go back and I have to go outside and drag all my plants into the house or something. Well, I said, well, actually, hold on. Wait. Hold on. Why are you doing that? First of all, the rain is good for you, and some of the plants are going to survive and some of them won't. That's just the reality. Look on the bright side. You know, maybe you'll get only the strong ones next year. So look on the bright side. If when you see someone who's doing something bad, maybe you'll get a chance to talk to them. Maybe they'll realize, as Allah has promised, they'll have their own opportunity to realize when they've done wrong. And that's not for you to police. And then when a storm is coming, what if you, instead of frantically fighting the storm. Say, okay, let it come. Let it come. Let's see what happens. And then you'll find that the storm just kind of comes and then goes. So the part of the key has to be a letting go of the fear of the inevitable. The panic attack, if you like, is a fear about the inevitable. We are all going to die at some point. We're all going to be embarrassed at some point. We're all going to be, you know, stuck for options at some point. Yes. But do we believe that Allah is there for us regardless? Yes, we do. So what's the problem? Well, there isn't. But we still have this feeling, and the feeling is because we have the nafs. Make peace with it. If you cannot, if you, I'm not saying, I'm not going to say, you're not going to put the phone down and go, oh, thanks, doc, I'm cured. As much as it sounds wise what I'm saying, you still have to admit that actually sometimes, even though you understand something, your feelings are not quite there yet. Accept that. Accept the fact that, hey, your nafs isn't quite as agile, and it's still going to sort of pipe up and make you panic. And then I guess sometimes what I say to some patients when I get to know them better is, why don't you roll your eyes and go, oh, here we go again. Oh, wait, I'm going to fear death. And then sort of go dramatic. Okay, Mr. Panic Attack, what am I going to die from this time? Oh, here we go. Allah, are you there? Look. Oh, my God, here we go. Here's my hat. I'm minded to think of an American comic show that I used to love. I don't know if you remember it or if I'm too old. There used to be something called Sanford and Son. Do you ever remember that? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
You remember the old guy used to say, Elizabeth, I'm coming. Elizabeth, I'm coming. Well, it's like that. Allah, the panic attack is here. And Allah is, okay, what's it doing? Well, it's telling me it's going to kill me. All right, is that the panic attack's job? No, that's your job, Allah. Yeah, so just keep that in mind. Thanks, Allah. Okay. You know, take a look outside yourself. And if it's a bit of humor that works, it is. If it's a bit of distraction that works, it is. And let's take this seriously, because I'm not adding sort of humor for the sake of lightening it. I'm adding humor because these things are part of the human experience. And humor, stepping outside ourselves, are very, very powerful tools. And we're never to doubt that. A lot of Islamic teaching, or teachers actually, sometimes make the mistake of confusing solemnity for seriousness. But when we look at the life of the Prophet, you know that this guy would be joking around with his Sahabi? Did you ever know that? Did you know that there's hadith there that, you know, sometimes one of his Sahabi went and, when he was standing behind him, went and poked him in the back. And the Prophet, everybody turned around and went, oh man, you provoked the Prophet. And the Prophet just stood quietly and then turned around and poked him right back and started laughing, right? and it's sort of an indication that we live life. And sometimes when we can't cope, next time after your panic attack, promise me this, that you'll say, you know what that doc said? He said I should laugh because I'm not going to die. So let me laugh at it. You know, that's one way. And also seek help. You know, if you can't cope with this stuff, my latest book, I don't use these things to plug my books. If my books sell, that's all well and good. My latest book called Thurwatul Qalb, you'll see it on my site somewhere. It's called Anxiety, Dealing with Anxiety Once and For All. And it's got several chapters and exercises on dealing with panic attacks and anxiety, which are very much along these lines. Have a look at that if you get hold of it, and see a doctor, because, you know, reach out when you can't do it yourself.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the call, and we appreciate you.
Thank you.
Well, okay, salam,
we sister. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, rahmatullah.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. You're on the line. Please state your name.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Hafsa. I'm calling from North Carolina. My question was basically, how do you deal with your outward emotions when you're dealing with your outward emotions, I guess, around people, so they don't feel, I don't know if the word is uncomfortable or as if you're feeling a way towards them because you're dealing with your own anxiety or depression or your iman is low, whatever the case might be, how do you help manage your outward emotions towards people around you?
Well, Salam, sister, thank you for your question, and may Allah help me to give you an answer which is useful, inshallah. I'm reading you correctly. I'm not sure if I've got exactly the point, the thrust of your question, but I think what you're saying is, if you're having a hard time on the inside, how do you sort of not let it be impact on other people around you on the outside? Is that what you're sort of saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think there's elements of this question which are sort of similar to the last caller's question, in that some of the answer may be within the question itself. You're assuming, for example, well, let's question the assumption. A, do you have to manage your feelings so that they don't show? What's your instinct?
What if you don't want to feel like you're being a burden on someone?
Right, right. So
like
that
your
that,
problems or whatever.
Right. So the next question I'm going to ask, which sort of segs, is depends really on the company you have. So if you're, for example, if you're going to work and you're having a tough time at home because, I don't know, you fell out with your husband or the neighbor's giving you trouble or whatever it is. And everybody can relate to that. You know, we all have to sometimes go to work, or we've got some toothache or whatever, and we just try to, it's normal and expected that everybody sort of just puts their sort of troubles a little bit aside, and you try and remain detached and just say, well, I've got a job to do here, and I'm going to try to remain friendly and just deal with whoever, and I'm not going to bring my problems to them. That's not fair, and I'd like to do a good job, and I believe I can. That's fine. However, if you find that you're at work and whatever it is that's bothering you is actually tangibly affecting your performance to the point where other people might notice, or you're very, very worried that other people notice, then that is a line that's crossed, which means you got to look after yourself now, because everybody should be able to sort of gloss over their issues, set them aside and carry on with work. But if they can no longer do that, then it's better to tell someone who's ideally responsible for you at work, and perhaps think about some time off or some support through occupational health, and then seek help for whatever it is, that's, you know, to solve whatever the issue is. If you've got back pain, go and get the back pain sorted. If it is. But what you've described is an element of being a burden to other people, and not letting them, I guess, feel down because you feel like you're some kind of lead weight who's dragging them down. So what I haven't talked about is, what about if you're around people who you love, people who are meant to sort of care for you and be there for you? And if that's the issue, then the question really is about, well, what is it that makes you think that you are a burden? And supposing they were someone you loved, let's turn the question around. Supposing it was someone you loved, I don't know if you have a sister or a brother, but let's assume that you have somebody who's very close to you in your family, and they came to me quietly and said, you know, I don't want to be bothersome to my sister because I don't want to burden her. And then you heard that she was asking me, what would you say to her?
Well, I mean, I would tell her, you know, I'm there for her, you know?
Exactly. So if there's people around you who you don't want to burden, and those people are people you love, they're probably thinking quite the opposite of what you. They want to actually be there for you. And nobody's saying that they need to be therapists, but they want to be there for you. They want to help you to feel that you're not a burden. And if you feel that you are a burden, it's a continuous sort of theme with you, and that you're having to mask over your feelings, that implies that there's something. I mean, that's fairly typical of a depressive disorder. Okay, that's what I'm getting at. And if it's a depressive disorder, It's very common to feel like you're a burden. You feel very guilty all the time. You feel like there's a lack of hope in your future, that you've got no way of improving your life, and that people are better off sort of without you, that you're generally tying them down. And if that's the case, depression is very clever. It's a bit like the devil. It tries to trick you into thinking it doesn't exist. It's the shaitan telling you, hey, you are actually not worthy. See, look at them. Hey, what are you doing? You just, you know, yeah, don't talk to them. No, what makes you think you're even going to be listened to? Ah, man, look at them. They got enough problems. You got to rise above that and go, well, okay, shaitan, if that's what you want to say to me. But I have a feeling that I am worthy. Why? Because I have certain key beliefs. And it takes me right back to the beginning of this show when I said you have to believe you are extremely worthy to Allah. And when He sees you struggling, He needs you to believe that, because you need to sort of say, I am worthy. I'm worthy. I don't care what I've done or not done. I'm worthy. Therefore, it follows that I need to talk to someone. And inshallah, they will react positively. But even if they don't, I'll go and find somebody who will treat me with the worth that Allah has given to me. That's what you got to do. It doesn't make sense to hide yourself and prevent yourself from being heard by people who love you. If it's people at work, yeah, you don't take love to work. But certainly if it's getting in the way of your work performance, then you need to talk to somebody at work about it. You don't have to pick on anybody. There are systems and managers. And if you don't have a supportive manager, go above that person or go to occupational health, whatever it is. Just to make work clear that actually there's something about this which is not making me a great employee, and I need some help here. I hope that goes some way towards answering your question.
Yes, JazakAllah khair.
No problem.
Thank you for your call. Assalamu alaikum. Okay, doctor. So we're going to be wrapping up now. We really appreciate you coming on and speaking and letting, you know, those who called in ask a few questions, and you've given great answers. I just want you to tell us where we can find your book, and also tell us about your YouTube page, and if you have a personal page that you sell it on, let us know the website you sell it on.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I'm going to tell you, I'm not really, this is a new world to me. I mean, I decided to work for the public domain, and I was used to people knocking down my door, because I think my waiting list at one point was down to 2.5 years. And I just got frustrated because I knew I just couldn't help everybody. So that's why I'm in the public domain. So selling myself is certainly not something I'm used to, because if anything, people came. But I will say that actually the quickest way to find me, if you've got Instagram, just find me on @DrTKHarris, all one word. And if you don't, go on YouTube and just type mine @DrTKHarris, all one word, or whatever. Or otherwise look for something called Mental Wealth. And if you've got WordPress, I'm on WordPress, and actually Instagram and YouTube have links to my WordPress page. And my WordPress page has got all the links to my books. And actually, if nothing else, most people in North America have Amazon. Just go and type in Dr. TK Harris to Amazon. You'll come across my, I think, four books so far, and my fifth one, inshallah, soon. And inshallah, also my app, which we're coming out in about a month's time. And all the money I gain from that is all just plowed straight back into this, trying to make more media, because eventually my hope is it'll all become free to anyone who needs it, inshallah.
Inshallah. I hope that this is a benefit to listeners. And inshallah, we'll do this again in a few months. I want to get your other books. So inshallah, we'll have a discussion about that. But I did get my book off Amazon, so if anyone is interested, just go on Amazon and you can find his books, Dr. TK Harris. Thank you so much, Dr. TK Harris. We appreciate you.
Barakallahu fi, and have a great day, and inshallah, we'll speak again soon.
Inshallah.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum.
Okay. So I just wanted to end with reflections from his book. Remember things grateful for in every dua, being grateful to Allah invites him to bring you further favor. If you don't accept responsibility for your actions, you will grow tired of defending them. Take control of your life. Trusting in Allah does not mean leaving your camel untied. If you take ownership of your mind, you can take ownership of anything else which Allah has promised you. Accept yourself always when you feel unacceptable. Allah accepts you always as you wiser than he. No, I'm sorry. Ask the question. Are you wiser than he? So always accept yourself. This was a good topic. Alhamdulillah, I pray that it was a benefit to everyone. And our next topic for next week, inshallah, will be, intimacy. Is it just physical or mental, emotional between you and your spouse, inshallah? So we thank you for joining us, the Muslim Sister Circle, with myself, Nisa, and my co-host, Amina. Amina, you want to say who you are?
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm so sorry, guys. I was having some technical difficulties. Inshallah, next week I'll have it together. I have known Nisa for 15 years. One of my closest and dearest friends, sister. I'm not even friend, sister. And I have 5 children. And I am grandma to 1. And I really appreciate, Nisa, you have me co-host with you. And again, inshallah, next week I'll have it together. My kids had to help me with the technical stuff. But inshallah, the talk, the doctor was awesome. It was very, very beneficial. And I hope everyone definitely benefited from it as well.
Yes, inshallah. And I'll post his links and everything on the page. Follow us at the Muslim Sister Circle on Facebook. And we'll just try to post everything. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi alladhi anzala ala 'abdihi al-kitaba wa lam yaj'al lahu 'iwaja. قيما لينذر بأسا شديدا من لدنه ويبشر المؤمنين الذين يعملون الصالحات أن لهم أجرا حسنا ماكثين فيه أبدا وينذر الذين قالوا اتخذ الله ولدا ما لهم به من علم ولا لآبائهم كبرت كلمة تخرج من أفواههم إن يقولون إلا كذبا